to Hellbrook and back. The purpose of a storyteller is not to tell you how to think, but to give you questions to think upon. Brandon Sanderson, The Way of Kings. What is a story? What are the components, the essential pieces, the id, the essence that are rendered well, that render a story well, not? I sat. Not much of a story, that. I bet it got you thinking a bit, though. The purpose of a storyteller is not to tell you how to think, but to give you questions to think upon. Still, not a great story. There aren't really any lingering questions. There isn't even really a character. I sat, and I sat. I squirmed in my chair, all alone as the fluorescent lights buzzed and beat down upon me. Nothing but boredom as accompaniment, as I struggled with my fate. Better. I hope I have your attention, at least. Now we've got some conflict, a setting, and a bit of an idea of the character. Could I do it? I didn't know how long it had been. I just knew that I must be drooling by now. I could just eat the cookie, but if I wait, then I'll get two cookies. Does the character make it? Outside the lab, we watch the study on self-control and delayed gratification. Amazingly enough, those that make it the full 15 minutes go on to lives of success, and those who don't? We have a conflict, a challenge. I feel the crunch of the cookie, the sweet sugar, but something more as well, a tinge of shame, and a feeling as if this isn't just about a cookie. The poor child, it wasn't just about a cookie. It was about the components of a story, a character, a setting, some plot, a theme, a conflict, a decision, and some consequences. In short, a journey. What more is a story than a portrayal of a journey? What is life? Life, our greatest journey? Clarissa Pinkola Estes says, one's interest in the world and in having experiences is really an interest in hearing, having, living one more story, then one more story, till one cannot live them out loud any longer. Perhaps it should be said that the drive to live out stories is as deep in the psyche when awakened as it is compelling to the psyche to listen to stories and learn from them. Leo Tolstoy agrees, saying, all great literature is one of two stories. A man goes on a journey, or a stranger comes to town. Those are both stories, Leo. Both journeys, rather. So in SAT parlance, story is to journey, as journey is to story. The purpose of a storyteller is not to tell you how to think, but to give you questions to think upon. I was born in Toledo, Ohio. Where people are born shouldn't really matter, but it is relevant in this case. In high school, there was nothing that I wanted more than to be a Vermonter. But Vermonters are a very particular bunch. In order to be a true Vermonter, you can't just live in Vermont. You have to have been born in Vermont. And depending on who you ask, maybe you have to be a second or a third or more generation descendant in order to be a real Vermonter. And if you're not a Vermonter, there's only one thing that you can be, and that's a Flatlander. Now, there are a number of reasons that I want to be a Vermonter. They're much more meaningful and a lot less petty, but being called a Flatlander really gets to me. One, my best friend growing up is about as much a Vermonter as one can be, and therefore had the appropriate feelings about Flatlanders. And also, I think of Vermonters as a private but very kind and resourceful folk, so something that I wanted to be. And being called a Flatlander hurt not just because of my Vermonter aspirations, but also because when you love to hike as much as I do, and as I did as a high school student, the last thing you want is to be associated with Flatland. Where I grew up, there's a place called Smuggler's Notch nearby. It's a glacial slot canyon that was carved out between Mount Mansfield and Spruce Peak. Mount Mansfield is the tallest mountain in Vermont. It may not quite be Mount Washington, but the bottom of this notch sits a good 1,500 feet below the top of the cliffs that rise up to the summit of Mount Mansfield. And if you imagine the gap between Mount Lafayette and the Old Man of the Mountain here, Smuggler's Notch is similar, but a lot narrower. And it's so narrow, in fact, and the cliff walls are so steep that when somebody decided for some reason to put a road through the notch, it is only one car wide, and it has to wind around and fit between the enormous and many elephant-sized boulders that occupy the bottom of the notch. And in fact, despite the numerous signs notifying them to turn around and not to go on, somehow a trucker every year decides to get themselves stuck in the notch. And the 1,500-foot cliffs make for quite an impending sight. Just at the edge of one of these cliff faces, there's a trail that climbs up from the bottom of the notch to the top of Mount Mansfield. And depending on who you ask, this trail is either called the Hellbrook Trail or the Profanity Trail, and either way, it's aptly named. The trail follows the brook at the edge of one of these cliffs. And brook is really a rather imprecise name for this body of water. I'm not sure what name you should give to a body of water that's between 1 and 3 feet wide, for a body of water that cascades down a series of near vertical rocks, but calling it a waterfall would probably be a better name. And climbing this trail can certainly cause one to elicit a rather large amount of profanity. Needless to say, this is my favorite trail ever. I always climb it as quickly as I can and use it as a measure of my current fitness and vitality. And I got a chance to test this one Saturday in the summer when I was about 17 years old. My younger cousin was visiting, and when she and my mom and my younger brother decided to go for a hike, I decided, well, let's do the Hellbrook Trail. What better way to prove my Vermonter abilities than to take my Flatlander Floridian cousin and take her up the hardest trail in the state of Vermont to the top of the state's tallest mountain? It took some patience and some guiding skills to get my family up this deep hand-over-hand climbing sections, but we did it. And near the summit, the trail branches, I split up with them briefly to give myself the extra challenge of going the long way around. And I was nicknamed Billy Goat by my cousin for the way I ran up on all fours over the boulders, kind of hand over hand, up to the summit, and then skipped back down to them as they made their way up. Because all of this was above tree line, they decided that they'd basically achieved seeing the view from the summit. And being that the day was starting to set on a bit, we decided to turn back around. We got to the first branch in the trail, and on the way back, we decided to split up again. The trail book makes it very clear that it's ill-advised to go down the Hellbrook Trail. So my family would take the gentler route down, and I'd skip back down the Hellbrook Trail, where I'd get the car and drive about a half mile down the road and meet up with them where their route comes out of the woods. So off I go, jogging down the trail. And before I get to the next and final branch off, I run into somebody. Internally, I just wanted to run right on by. I'd never gone down this trail at speed before. And normally I take the advised route down, so I wanted to see what I could do and see if I could beat my family down as a bit of a race. And plus, going down trails quickly is one of my favorite pastimes. As much as I love hiking and getting to the summit, my love of downhill trail running might be even stronger. So as I contemplate just zooming by this guy, I see him take out a map and look confused. I slow down as I approach, and he asks if he can hike down the Hellbrook Trail. Take one look at this guy and think, not a chance. I say no, I don't really think that's a good idea. In the trail description here you see on the map, it says it's not really the way to go down. There's another trail in a moment you'll come to, it's much easier. He's like, yeah, but it's the fastest way down. See, the map says it's the shortest distance. Right, yeah, I mean, it's the shortest distance, but the reason it's the shortest distance is it's really steep. It's really very hard. If you take this other route, it's a lot more gentle route down the mountain. It'll be a lot more enjoyable, and because it's easier, it'll probably actually be faster for you. Again, yeah, but it's the shortest way, so I should go that way. And we kind of go back and forth like this for a little while, and eventually I give up and say, all right, let's carry on. The trail splits up here again anyway, so we figure it out then. So we head off towards the Hellbrook Trail. About 500 feet later, the guy stops, and I'm thinking, oh my God, if he takes a rest this often, he's going to have a very long day. As we continue, I'm thinking, even if I show him the other trail, maybe I should stick with him. And when we come to the split, I spend another 5 minutes or so trying to explain why he should not go down the Hellbrook Trail with much the same results without getting anywhere. So finally, off we go, past the Hellbrook Trail sign stating 1.3 miles to Route 108, straight down, as noted on your order of service. We get maybe another 400 feet or so, and he stops to rest. 300 feet, stop to rest. And we're only just getting to the slope. We're not really to the steep part of the trail yet. We have a mile or and a quarter or so to go, more or less straight down, and we're stopping every few hundred feet. So he takes a rest and takes out his water bottle. And when I say water bottle, I'm being very, very, very generous. He takes this thing out. It's like one of those little kids, like squirt twist off top things. It wasn't exactly that, but it was like a little 8-ounce Poland Springs mini thing. And it was 2/3 was already gone. And it's July. It's hot. This guy weighs probably 300 or 350 pounds. He's working up a very good sweat already, and in fact, already had before I met him. So now I'm in full-on survival expedition mode. No more water for me. I'm in good shape and already well hydrated, and the last 2 of my 3 liters of water are now obviously going to be for him. So from now on, I'm not just a guide to this man, I'm essentially his Sherpa. As we move along, stopping and starting, I'm wondering how the heck he even got up here. As we briefly chat during the breaks, as he catches his breath, I learn that he got up by taking the gondola. Now, I didn't even know the gondola ran in the summer. It's used for skiing in the winter and goes up the backside of Mount Mansfield, where Stowe Resort is. Now that I've learned this, my perception of this man's hiking abilities, which were already being reduced by the minute, suddenly go from scoring him like a 1.5 out of 10 to trending towards negative numbers. I realize my family must be starting to get worried, just as we get to the crux of the problem. There's a section of the trail I think of as the three walls, or the three ledges, or the three ladders, and you literally have to turn down and climb down like it's a ladder. And each of these maybe 12-foot rock faces, really the only way to get down is to hold on to the little outcroppings and roots that happen to branch across them. And there's small, maybe only 2-foot-wide ledges between each wall. So we get to the top of this section, and I'm shaken out of my frustration about how long this is going to take and wondering how I'm going to get him down this section, especially because he seems to really barely have the coordination to walk across the relatively flat ground, let alone down this. So as I'm trying to psych myself up for how I'm going to do this, I get shaken out of this trance and glance his way just in time to see him toss a skull-sized rock down the three 12-foot cliff faces. At this point, I'm losing my mind. For a split second, I questioned whether this man deserved any help. And after forcefully and kindly explaining not to ever do anything like that ever again, which I'm not sure he really got, we carried on. And at this point, I'm realizing that not only is this guy not really physically in the condition for this sort of task, but probably not necessarily in the mental condition either. As we prep for this first ledge, after thanking all things, no one got brained by his rock, I realize it's late enough in the day that there's very little chance of assistance if something goes wrong. Probably the reason that there was no one to get brained by that rock is that no one's going to be starting up the trail at this point. And if you remember that sign I told you about at the top of the trail, I realized that no one should be coming down this way to intersect with us either. So basically, I have to do this on my own. And if either of us gets hurt, there's no way in Hellbrook we could get the other person down. Also, as small as I am now, as a high school student, I was probably 2 inches shorter and had less than half the amount of body fat I had now. I was very fit, but wafer thin, and it's not like I was built for carrying large weight. So I couldn't let him get hurt because he's nervously become fixated on my assistance, and at this point there's no way he'll let me leave him injured or not. As he's working himself into a nervous shiver looking down, I contemplate how I'm going to talk him down these cliffs. And finally I decide that really there's only one way, and it's not to talk to him, it's to show him. I'm going to have to climb down first just below him. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to see the hole to help. It's too steep to even look over the edge and see what's there. So I'll need to be below him to tell him where to put his hands and feet as he goes, and that's literally what I did. But I'm also trying to avoid being directly below him so that should he fall, I'm not going to get serial crushed by a huge freaking guy. Somehow we make it past the first wall, despite his fears and his arms shaking. After a brief rest, we can continue down the second wall, and at this point, his arms are really shaking, and his legs too, and more out of fatigue than fear, I think. And I'm just saying to myself this whole time, keep him attached to the wall, keep him attached to the wall. If he slips, unless I'm very, very quick to react, I know I'm done for. I'm trying to constantly stay to one side or the other as much as possible, but at this point, he needs enough assistance that I'm basically literally having to take his feet and place them one at a time in the right positions. And somehow we finish that second ledge. After a good while to recover, and finally at my urging, we start again. I knew he was tired, and I wanted to let him recover, but I also didn't want him to get him stiff, let him get stiff and cold from sitting too long. Somehow, seeing the goal at the bottom must have been motivating enough because somehow we did it. We made it through the crux. And then he asks how much further there is to go. And truthfully, we're probably only halfway down. We've got a long, long way to go, but I can't tell him that. And so the game begins. We're stopping literally every 100 feet or so, not for a breath or two, but 5 or 10. And the rests are getting closer together and longer. And each time I'm asked how far we have left, and I'm exhausting the various different ways to describe the fact that, yeah, we just made progress, good job, you're awesome, but also still being realistic and saying we should also probably keep moving when you're able, though, it would be nice to get down before it's dark. So it's probably taken 3 hours maybe at this point to go two-thirds of the way down and what would have taken me maybe half an hour. So making the same pace, we're talking another hour or hour and a half maybe to the bottom. So I'm trying to talk to him and coerce him into longer efforts and shorter breaks while observing his physical state. But it's not like I'm the best conversationalist, and neither is he. And as the trail finally has started to level out a bit, we somehow managed to have a little bit of a limited dialogue back and forth. And I'm able to distract him a bit by talking about where he's from. It turns out he's Puerto Rican, and he's only lived in Vermont for a year. He heard great things about how hiking is one of the best things to do in Vermont, and somebody mentioned Mount Mansfield, so he drove up to check it out and found a trail map and ended up on a gondola. Somehow, amazingly enough, we did finally make it to the bottom of the trail. It's limited, but we've got enough of a conversation going. I'm thinking maybe I can teach this guy about the Vermonter belief in paying it forward. We can finally hear cars very close now, and as I'm thinking about this, I round the corner, and there's my mom, clearly terrified, heading up the trail. At first, she has this look like, oh, thank God, look on her face, and then she looks me up and down and gets this very confused look on her face, clearly trying to find where the injury is and not being able to find one. And that's when the other guy rounds the corner, and she gets a look of recognition and then an even greater look of confusion. I signal we're okay and not to ask, and we carry on the last little bit down the trail of the car. We drive him back to his car, and my mom tries unsuccessfully to have a little small talk with the guy. And I can tell she really wants to understand what happened and isn't really getting anything from him. And I'm just eager to get him to his car so we can move on. As we drop him off, I can tell she wants to scold him or ask him for a tip for my assistance or maybe at least admonish him for not saying thank you. But she changes her mind and I think also concluded that he didn't necessarily have the mental capacity for the message to be received. She gets back in the car and I relay the whole story to everybody, adding one detail I've left out until now. As I told you at the beginning, I really want to be a Vermonter. Vermonters are generally rather private people, but if someone is in need, that's when the pay it forward mentality, the kindness comes out. So I got towards the end of the story where I'm wondering about teaching him about the pay it forward mentality, and clearly my mom had been wondering this the whole time. So is he going to pay it forward, she asks. The purpose of a storyteller is not to tell you how to think, but to give you questions to think upon. I said, well, I was talking to him about Vermont and asked him how he liked it. And in probably the only clearly communicated portion of our conversation, he said, well, it is very clear, pretty here, but I miss Puerto Rico. Oh, why is that, I asked. Well, Vermonters are selfish.